It is week 13 of the 2023 college football season. This is the We Hate Your Team podcast, a proud member of the VSN Collegiate Network. I'm Kelly Ford, and with me, as always, is my friend and co-host, Zach King. Kinger, it is rivalry week. How we doing, man?
Rivalry week, Kelly. Week 13. It's hard to believe that we have made it all the way to the final weekend of the college football regular season. It's been an awesome season thus far, and we got quite the college football playoff circumstance shaping up here over these next few weeks. Depending on how the outcome of the games go this weekend, there's going to be a lot of movement made, a lot of crazy possible scenarios that could happen here as we approach the last week. So I'm ready for it, man. Rivalry week, there's not much better.
It is awesome. Interesting that you mentioned the college football playoff, Kinger, given who we have on tap joining us here tonight. It is a very fun time of year. We're going to talk college football playoff. We're going to talk a little playoff predictor a little bit later. I don't want the primary message, though, of this episode to get lost, because as exciting as all that is, this week, rivalry week, this college football Saturday, the final college football Saturday of the regular season, this is the pinnacle for me. This is the apex. This is the climax. Whatever you want to say, the regular season is paramount. This is the week that I live for, King. I know you feel the same way as our guest does as well. I know I built him up enough. Let's get right to it, Kinger. I am so excited to have with us this week someone that I've been following on Twitter or X for quite some time now. We've gone back and forth on various things over the years. We usually see eye to eye, but there are a couple topics that I think we take different approaches to or have different opinions on, which that's good for healthy debate. I am talking about my friend, someone I'm excited to have on. His name is Mitchell Wesson. You probably know him on Twitter, on X, as at W-E-S-S-O-N-M-O, Wesson Mo. He works for ESPN on the analytics team. He is very involved, King, with ESPN's FPI on the college front, something that I, of course, pay very close attention to and have a great affinity for. Mitchell, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me. Just more people can know who to yell out on Twitter now when they don't like what we're putting out. So,
well, I do. Sorry, I didn't mean to out you anymore. I mean, I think you're out there. Fine. I think you're out there as someone who works for ESPN on the FPI. But I agree that, hey, you catch a lot of heat for what FPI puts out, despite the fact, hey, I don't work for ESPN. I don't have to say this. I say it because I believe it. FPI is a tremendous metric. If you go over to the prediction tracker and you look at, you know, absolute air for all the different metrics that are out there, FPI is always right at the top, and if not at near the top, of all the metrics that are on there in terms of minimizing absolute air on a game in, game out, week in, week out basis every single college football year. It is a tried and true metric. I think it's a little bit misunderstood. I think sometimes people see something and they jump to a conclusion that might not be exactly what the metric is saying. But Mitchell, take that for whatever it's worth. I wanted to say that so it didn't come off as anybody being defensive. Again, I don't work for ESPN. I don't owe them anything other than appreciation for Mitchell spending time with us here on the show. But Mitchell, if you wouldn't mind, tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us about your career path, anything that you're, you know, willing and able to share about the work you're doing with ESPN analytics. We don't want to get you in trouble, but anything that you can share, I'm very interested. I know Zach is as well, and I imagine our listeners are going to be too. So just take it away, man. The floor is yours.
Well, thank you. So I think like I've heard some of your guests talk about before and colleagues that I know that sort of work in sports analytics, I have a somewhat traditional, non-traditional path where we all sort of start out in a different place, not necessarily with the expectation that, hey, you know, we're going to end up doing our dream job of, you know, working in sports, but maybe working on the side. So my career path was I went to school at Alabama, did an undergraduate in engineering, kind of got through a couple of years of that, realized that wasn't really going to be for me. Got a minor in math, which would eventually help me when I would figure out what I wanted to do, which was applied stats. So I got a master's in that at Alabama. And then that took me, I had a connection there, with, Lowe's. So I went to work at Lowe's, HQ in North Carolina, doing some enterprise analytics from there, but starting to do some of my own, sports analytics projects on the side. And then, you know, one day I saw a job posting in ESPN. I was like, hey, this isn't, I highly doubt this is going to work out, but what the heck, I'll throw my resume out there. And, you know, 6 or 7 months later, you know, it somehow it worked out. Yeah. So,
We have a similar background, Mitchell. I'm also an engineering undergraduate major. Decided, I actually worked for a year as an engineer. Decided, you know, I don't want to do that forever. So went back to school, got some degrees that allowed me to make the transition into college athletic administration. So a little bit different route, but ultimately ending in the same spot, right? Working in sports, something that we're more passionate about. So I totally understand where you're coming from. What type of engineer did you say you were?
I dabbled in a little bit of everything, but I landed in mechanical. I finished.
You and me both, brother. All right. Okay, sorry. Sorry. Didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, no, that was look at us go.
All right. So, hey, what is the coolest thing that you are able to talk about that you have worked on at ESPN? And again, college football podcast, that's where my main level of interest is. So if it can be FPI related, great, but it doesn't have to be. What's the coolest project you've worked on, or what's the coolest, you know, aspect of FPI that you have been able to integrate, like an idea that you've seen go from the infancy stages to implementation that has proven to be, wow, adding this improved the model's accuracy or minimized our error here or whatever it is. Like, whatever you're able to share, a cool story, tidbit, or something that was added that you had a direct either impact on or executed as part of the team?
So two things. So one of my first projects when I joined the team, they were looking to refresh their preseason numbers. So sort of refresh how they calculated preseason FPI. At the time, I got hired back in 2019. So this was right on the cusp of like the transfer portal just blowing up. And we had already seen it. We'd already seen obviously some high profile transfer quarterbacks making an impact. And so that was when they sort of asked what I wanted to work on, that's sort of what I was thinking, like, hey, let's try and expand. You know, they had a model that took into account, I think they were using, they had like returning starters broken down by position, as well as like historical performance and a few other like coaching changes maybe. But I said like, hey, let's try and catch some of this stuff that's going on with the transfer portal, starting with quarterbacks. But I was able to build it out in the offseason to account for all, you know, any transfer portal movement. Largely only the quarterbacks matter, as you might imagine. But you know, for teams like, say, Alabama or whatever that lose a lot of production to like the draft or something, you know, in aggregate, you know, some of that stuff will add up too. So I would say that was sort of the first one that I had a lot of fun with in the college football space. More recently, this past offseason, I refreshed our college football playoff model, the model that feeds our All-State playoff predictor. So that was an interesting and fun project. I learned a lot about the committee's process. I don't know how familiar you guys are with like the actual step-by-step process, but they listed out on their website, you know, the way that they like start with a team of 30 and then they sort of deal in buckets. Anyway, all of that was interesting. And so the model that we sort of ended up using this season that did sort of some improvement over what we were doing before sort of mimics that approach that the committee does. This is heck of a season to get to watch it sort of run through. But I would say those two are probably my most fun projects that I've had to work on.
Those are awesome. Returning production. Oh my gosh, it takes me so much time every single summer. And yes, with the increased usage of the transfer portal, the one-time free transfer that we saw implemented here recently, the extra COVID year of eligibility, which still permeates and will permeate here for another year, has made all of that more difficult, very time intensive. But that is awesome. Very cool that you're improving that aspect or have improved that aspect. And yes, I am intimately familiar with the committee's process because I am a huge nerd, and I have gone through that step-by-step process that they do in years past and tried to kind of look at the things they're looking at and generate my own committee version of the rankings based on what I think they would do. Mitchell, Zach, I'm gonna let you get in here right after this, I promise. I'm dominating the conversation. I hope you don't mind. I know you're keeping tabs on that Purdue game. We're recording on Tuesday night. Zach's being a trooper, pulling double duty on the episode and the Purdue game in Maui. But Mitchell, it's got to be difficult to, and I know we have past behavior from the committee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it has to be difficult to try to program in the actions of 13 individuals, some of which, always a subset of which, are new every single year. So it's not like you have the exact same group of people that have the exact same thinking year over year. There's similar themes that persist, of course, mm-hmm. and there's large carryover from one roster to another in the committee room. But what is that process like as you're trying to model what a human behavior, human thinking is? Because I mean, we're FPI, K-4 ratings. We're trying to model and predict human behavior on the football field. That's one thing, but trying to predict how people are thinking and approaching a process that we have 13 different people that could view it 13 different ways. How do you do that?
I'm trying to predict rankings. Now, how we get to those rankings, you know, I think you described well, it's very subjective. It's just the opinions of a group of people aggregated. But in terms of the modeling and sort of how to think about it, I sort of approach it like any other, like we're predicting anything else, be it, you know, scores for a game or something. And I try not to get too hung up in, sort of the subjectivity of the data itself, because I think rightly you can kind of get lost in it potentially.
I believe that.
And so, you know, and we get, you know, we hear the committee, you know, the spokesperson that they'll have on there after the rankings sort of give us an idea of the metrics they look at. And so when sort of building these models, I try to lean on metric, you know, we don't have the data they're looking at. They get data from, a different company. But they give us an idea of the types of data they're looking at. So strength of schedule, top 25 wins, game control, all of these things that we can sort of approximate and have metrics for ourselves. So really just taking those same types of inputs that they're talking about using, try and predict the rank, you know, the ultimate rankings that we're getting. I would love if we got the actual like vote counts, but you know, we just get the rankings and try and do our best from there.
King, I'm letting you hop in because Mitchell mentioned something there. Ranked wins. Mitchell, I know it's not your preference. That's what the committee uses. Oh my gosh, it's enough to drive me up a wall. So I need to take a timeout. King, or hop in here.
Yeah, I'll just start off by saying big shout out to Mitchell here and you, Kelly, for being patient with me tonight. As you said, not ideal timing for this podcast recording tonight. Was hoping that the Purdue game would be wrapped up, but I am happy to report that we did just defeat Tennessee and we will play in the championship tomorrow for the Invitational. So very pumped about that. But Mitchell, it has been really cool to hear your backstory. Obviously, your connections with Kelly coming from the similar engineering background, but just like a lot of our other guests, finding something you're passionate about that you want to do and pursuing it and getting this opportunity that you've had. So working for the ESPN, worldwide leader in sports, I'm just a little bit curious as to kind of what you can share around that process for actually making a decision as to which model is going to be utilized, right? Obviously, you have a full team there. I'm sure there are so many different tweaks and changes, but what is that decision-making process come like? Is it a team effort? Is it individual as to say, hey, this is what we're working with. This is what we feel is the best option, and we're going to move forward with this.
It's different depending on the project. So, you know, there are projects where, you know, maybe more than one person's doing some modeling work. But in general, you know, nothing's going into production. Nothing's getting, put out into the world without basically, you know, the larger team's blessing. And so while, you know, yes, maybe like I'm the one, that is, you know, developing the model and iterating on it, we're talking about it with the team. We're showing results. You know, we're sort of back testing, talking about different inputs. You know, we had some discussion about whether or not to include like FPI as an input into the model, or just sort of simplify it down to like just strength of record, game control, those types of things. And so, you know, that's a decision that like maybe we make as a larger team, and we do so by basically looking at each version of the model, looking at the prediction errors, you know, how explainable some of these things are. So that's largely been an example of the process for this. It varies a little bit from, you know, maybe sport to sport, but in general, that's what it looks like.
Interesting. Coming from ESPN, I figured that process would be quite tedious, and not surprised to hear that it's a very large team effort. But I got two quick questions to follow up. One, I guess I want to know, what's been the most challenging thing for you with the adjustment starting working with ESPN? And then secondarily, what's your favorite Alabama football game memory?
Oh, boy. Okay, so challenge with ESPN. I think it's probably a struggle that everybody that sort of does analytics in the public space, you know, probably deals with. Just sort of push back when there are numbers that sort of don't quite fit with maybe what expectations are. So like Colorado this season was probably a good example. I mean, we were getting a little bit of heat on Colorado's, you know, what we had for Colorado's projections, you know, early on, you know, starting at the preseason, then especially after they won a few games.
Where are those people now, Mitchell? That's all I'm asking. Where are those people now?
hopefully they're coming around. But I think that's, it's, you know, on the flip side of that, we've had a lot of recent buy-in. I mean, a lot of, to like sort of jump sports a second. I mean, we've had a lot of buy-in lately on, you know, some of like our fourth down decision-making stuff that we do for like NFL. You've probably started to see it more on the college broadcasts, as like, you know, when, on the bottom line, you know, if it's a fourth down that's sort of in a gray area, they'll put up what the model from our team sort of recommends. So take the good with the bad. It's mostly good, but I would, so remind me, your second question was
favorite Alabama football memory.
You know, there've been so many. I mean, I got to Alabama in 2009. So, you know, the first championship season, you know, with Saban, you know, that as someone that grew up a sort of diehard Alabama fan, I mean, sort of that whole season was one long sort of good memory. Yeah, I mean, I guess if I had to pick one, being there for the Rocky Block and 2009 was probably one of my favorite like high point moments in a game.
Well, you're right about that. You're in a fortunate position, Mitchell, where you've seen a lot of good football over the 15 years or so,
and it looks
like it's coming to an end anytime in the immediate future. So you guys are definitely in a good position as Alabama fans, as much as those Bama fans love.
It's a good thing we're doing the show now and not maybe a earlier in the season, and might have had some freezing cold takes if we had recorded this maybe after like the USF game or something.
The models adjust though, and as I'm looking at my power ratings here, Alabama, it actually wasn't after the USF game, Alabama fell to as low as number 10 in my power ratings. But Mitchell, that was actually after the Arkansas game going into Tennessee. I don't know how, what Alabama's low was in FPI this year from an ordinal rank standpoint. I know the power rating is much more important than the rank, but I find if I start talking 21.3 points, people, I get lost pretty quick. So number 10 is as far as they fell. They were number one for 1 week going into the Texas game after starting the year number 3. Currently have them number 6. So I don't know, how far did Alabama fall? What was the low point this year in the ordinal rank? Do you have that handy?
I'm going through it week by week right now. I would have said, all right, so 7. All right, so I think after... All right, looks like week 7 they fell down to 7, 8 they clawed back up. So it looks like they got down to 7.
Or no. So
23-1. I assume we're probably on a pretty similar scale. So we had them at 23-1.
Yep, and mine was 21-3 was the bottom out point. So interesting, not too different there in terms of what we're looking at. So very interesting.
Yeah, I noticed. I noticed, you know, looking at one of the guests you had on earlier this year, Nate Manzo's composite ratings. I feel like, FPI and your ratings probably hit are fairly similar. I mean, I would imagine we can probably talk details after offline, but I imagine like the process looks like it must be somewhat similar.
FPI is one of the metrics out there that I certainly use as a benchmark. There's a couple, SP Plus with Bill Connolly, yeah. Brian from O's FEI. Those are kind of the gold standard in my opinion. No offense to ESPN's FPI. Those are the gold standards. FPI, as I mentioned at the intro, a very, very solid metric, performs very well in minimizing absolute error, which that's what I'm most concerned with. I know that's what FPI's goal is too, based on some comments I've seen made on the Twitter platform. So yes, I do think from a process standpoint, likely we're you know, looking at some of the same things. I really built my model using information that I could glean about Bill and Brian's processes, I should say. But then using that, I'm sure, you know, as the foundation, that's those are well-respected models. Lots of people in the community are using them as kind of a template or an engine. So yes, I would imagine that between K-Ford ratings and the FPI, there's likely, and we see it almost week in, week out, there's likely some similarities there in how we go about things, I would say. Well, I could talk about this for hours, as I say, almost with every single one of our guests, because, and Mitchell, I think I said this before we started, I mean it. My favorite part of every single episode is this discussion with the guest. Yes, it's fun talking about the games. It's always great hearing King's takes on the games. People are tired of hearing mine. Like, I'm tired of hearing mine. I love talking about things with the guest. I could do it forever. I won't, because I want to save a little bit extra time. We are going to talk about that All-State playoff predictor, powered by ESPN's FPI, that Mitchell is involved with, the generation of, tweaked it this summer. So I want to save time for that, and we're going to get to it. But first, let's do dive into the feature games that we have. Before we do so, King, we've got exciting news. Our listeners know what time of the show this is. Hey, guys, you got an ad read. Okay, we get it. We know. You don't know, because we actually have something new and exciting this week, King. What's going on with our friends over at Homefield?
Oh, yeah. We're bringing the listeners a little something extra special this week for the holiday week. Week 13, rivalry week. One last time to hop on, get yourself some new gear, and represent your team before the regular season ends. Unfortunately for my Purdue Boilermakers, that will end this weekend. But we're throwing something a little bit extra. Instead of the standard 15% off this week, first-time buyers for Homefield apparel using code BLACKFRIDAY will get 20% off anything in the store. Again, Homefield's been a great sponsor of the Variety Sports Network this year. Go check them out. Quality, vintage, premium college apparel.
Love it, King. And as King reminded me last week, I promised I wouldn't forget, go on over to kfordratings.com. You can get some K-Ford Ratings merchandise there as well. There we go, King. I didn't forget this time. All right, guys, let's get into our feature games. As we always do, we let our guests pick a game, Kinger picks a game, I pick a game, and then we leave it up to the fans, the listeners. What's the one game not already on the slate that you want us to dive into? Mitchell, as our guest, you get to go first. And the game that we've got here is one that I am incredibly excited for. I am every single year. Doesn't matter what the records are. Doesn't matter what's at stake in terms of, you know, title, conference championship implications or playoff implications. It doesn't matter, because this is a rivalry game that means so much to both sides. It literally splits a state. We have got your team, your alma mater, the Alabama Crimson Tide. They hit the road. They're going to the plains to take on the Auburn Tigers. Mitchell, you wanted this game. I'm very glad you did. Let's hear it. What do you make of Alabama at Auburn?
Yes, we've got the plucky underdog heading into a big SEC road game for them. Yeah, you know, I think last week's game. So I'm sure everyone listening probably saw the result from last week for Auburn, and I think that kind of made that's part of what makes this game kind of interesting to me, because Auburn is a team that I think takes very seriously beating Alabama. And so I feel like that result can maybe be a little misleading in ways where I wonder how much Auburn was sort of just kind of like looking ahead to Alabama. And, looking at Auburn this season, I feel like they've kind of overperformed at home this year. Their home games this year were, they started with UMass. They went Samford, only lost by a touchdown to Georgia, only lost by a touchdown to Ole Miss, beat Mississippi State by 14, Vanderbilt by 16, and then obviously laid an egg against New Mexico State. And then sort of like you set up at the beginning, this is a rivalry game, and I think this means a lot to them. So I'm not picking Auburn, but I would not be surprised if it is kind of a scary game. I'll take Alabama, but I will be very surprised if it's a very comfortable win for them.
That's fair, and I think that's something that we can come to expect from these types of rivalry games. Kinger, what about you? I know you love talking Alabama. Auburn's the opponent this week. What do you make of this game? It's the Iron Bowl, man. You're excited about this one, right?
Of course, man. And I was just going to say, regardless of my feelings on the Alabama Crimson Tide, the Iron Bowl is still one of my favorite college football games to watch every year. It's one of the best rivalry games we have. And in my opinion, it's unfortunate we're missing the days where the Iron Bowl had this massive hype when Auburn was back at that upper echelon. Because in my opinion this week, I think we're looking at a game where there's a pretty decent chance that Bama's going to end up dominating this one. I do want to take the Tide laying the points this week. The one thing that I am a little hesitant about is I'm not sure we're going to need to or we are going to see 100% Tide effort team this week. Yes, it is a rivalry game. But I look at this Auburn offense, and I think they're really going to struggle this week. The only real success they've found this year is when they are able to successfully run the ball. They have had a few big weeks on the ground. They hung in there at Georgia earlier this year, who's been good against the run. But I think this Alabama defense has really turned the corner this second half of the season. This run defense is very legit. They got a couple weeks ago, mobile QB, Jaden Daniels. But Auburn really doesn't have that threat with Peyton Thorne. And I think this is a week that Saban's really going to be able to key in on that run game. I don't think Auburn has the playmakers outside to win consistently versus that talented secondary. So I think this is a game that we're really going to see Auburn struggle. And I don't think that's going to be the same case with this Bama offense. They also really seem to be rolling and improving at the right time of the year. The improvement of Jalen Milroe definitely cannot be understated. He looks so much more comfortable in recent weeks. He's making the right decisions, and I think he has changed the dynamic of this Bama offense. So I think Auburn does have a pretty good defense. They have a strong secondary, but they have struggled at times versus the run this year, a game that Bama is going to be able to control the tempo. I like the matchup for their offensive line in this one. So if Milroe keeps playing solid ball, I don't think there's any reason to think that they have too many issues scoring this week. I do worry about maybe that second half let up like we maybe saw against Arkansas earlier this year, but I do think Bama is going to get up early, and this is a game that they're going to comfortably win.
For me, guys, yeah, King, it's one of my favorite games every single year as well. I hate to bring it up, Mitchell, but like the kick six, it is one of the most iconic plays in college football history, a game that's been around for more than 150 years. I don't know if that will ever be topped in terms of not just this rivalry, but really just, you know, college football fandom and how much one play swings everything. Because it wasn't just that game, it was then, you know, the SEC championship, a national champion, like all of these ripple effects from it. It's just incredible. But on the other side, Nick Saban, who of course on the wrong side of that game, best college football coach of all time, in my opinion. I'm not an Alabama fan, but I am a Nick Saban fan. I think what he's been able to accomplish at Alabama since he got there, and Mitchell talked about it earlier, you know, 2009 was his first year on campus. Golly, man, you picked a darn good time to be getting to Alabama. Get out of here. That's ridiculous how much success that you experienced as a student there with that football team. But what Saban has done of building this program, and sustaining the excellence year after year after year, as the landscape has changed so much, Saban continues to find a way to put himself and his program at the top. It's remarkable. So I love this game. It means a ton to me, and I'm not even I'm from the Midwest. Like, I'm not affiliated with these teams, I'm not affiliated with the SEC. I can only imagine what it means to those fans down there in Alabama and in SEC country. For me, in this game, I do like Alabama. I've got them by about 12 and a half. It's an 81% win expectancy. Alabama, for me, power rated number 6 right now. They're number 6 in my most deserving rankings as well, which that's a whole other conversation that we can get into a little bit with the playoff predictor. This is a number 6 defense for me. The offense is number 16. So, Kinger, as you mentioned, Milroe playing much, much better. They had bottomed out as low as number 29 earlier this year on the offensive side of the ball. They're now up to number 16. That gives them the advantage on both sides, but they do have to go on the road in this game against an Auburn team that does have a pretty good defense. I know they gave up 31 points last week to New Mexico State. Mitchell, I think you're right. This Auburn team probably looking ahead a little bit. Is that excusable for losing to a team that I have power rated number 89 at home? No, that is not excusable. That is why Auburn fell 2.5 points in the power ratings this week. It was the second largest drop of any team in the power ratings this week. Like, that's a big fall for this late in the year. 2.5 points from week 2 to week 3. Okay, that's not as big of a deal. 2.5 points from week 12 to 13. That is huge. So, yes, the model has adjusted. It was not a good showing. The offense is concerning. I have this unit number 70 in the entire country. Listen, you put up 10 points at home against New Mexico State. I think that probably tells you everything you need to know. So my numbers do like Alabama. 12.5 points is my projected spread. 81% win expectancy for the Tide. Straight up, they've got Georgia on tap in Atlanta next week. I am not at all concerned about this being a look ahead for Alabama, though, given what Auburn means, what the Iron Bowl means to this program, to both of these programs. So I think Alabama gets it done. But anytime you go on the road and play your big rival, anything can happen. We've seen it time and time again. I just hope we get a very good game. All right, guys, moving on to our next one. It's another rivalry game. It probably doesn't register at the same level in terms of national scale or interest. However, I'm going to give my friend King some credit here. Every single week, and King, it was your idea. You get all the credit for this new format of, hey, Kelly, why don't we just pick a game and kind of go with this? I love our new format that we've been rolling with for most of this year and will continue to roll with. Every single week, though, you and I have the autonomy to pick any game we want. You could pick Purdue every single week and I would never say a word. Would I love it? No. But listen, if that's what you want to do and how you want to spend your pick and your game, go for it. You have not picked Purdue one time this year, even though I know you've wanted to talk about them. This week you did. You picked Purdue at home against Indiana, the old Oaken Bucket game. I'll let you describe how you phrased it to me in the text, King, if you want to go there. I won't steal your thunder on that. But it is a huge rivalry game for these two fan bases. Much like Alabama gets split between Alabama and Auburn, the state of Indiana gets split between Indiana and Purdue. We also have Notre Dame mixed in there as well. But for the purposes of Big Ten competition, huge game in the state of Indiana between these two teams. Kinger, you wanted it. You got it. Let's hear it.
Well, as Drake says, Kelly, you know I had to do it for him. Battle for last place in the Big Ten. If we're going to talk Michigan-Ohio State this week, then I absolutely think that this is a game that needs to be in a conversation. We know that fans all across the country this week will turn on their TVs at 11 a.m. and they will have either multiple screens going or be switching back and forth frequently from Fox to the Big Ten Network to make sure that they catch this one too. I expect high viewership on the game this week. But in all seriousness, obviously Purdue's my team. I went 12 weeks of the college football season without picking a game to discuss. So with it being rivalry week, we're going to go ahead and pick the Bucket game versus the Hoosiers for the sole possession of the bottom of the barrel in the Big Ten. And there's no doubt about it, it's been a pretty rough season for my Boilers. Ryan Walters, first-year head coach, stepped into a pretty tough position this year, coming off one of the highest moments in Purdue football history last year in the Big Ten Championship. We had a pretty much gutted roster this year, lost a ton of production, and had to rely a lot on the transfer portal, new faces, new system in the building. And along with a pretty brutal schedule, it definitely has not gone according to plan. It was going to be tough for them to succeed this year. And it's unfortunate we are where we are at, but Purdue just really didn't have the horses to compete at the highest level that we needed to this year. So Indiana is obviously in that same boat. Outside the COVID year, they've really not been able to compete at the level that they're looking for either. Tom Allen was a coach whose name was on the hot seat heading into this season. I would not be surprised if Indiana decided to go a different direction and try and revamp the program after this year. The buyout situation with him is a little bit interesting because he is signed through 2027. They would owe him $20 million in a buyout. But this is now 4 seasons in a row now where the Hoosiers have not won more than 4 games. So they have a pretty big decision to make there in the offseason. But I do think this is going to be a tightly contested one, especially if the Boilermakers do not have Hudson Card. He was out last week with a rib injury. I think he might try and go this week, but regardless, It's a different world that we as Purdue fans have found ourselves in this year, in which we are a competent rushing team relying on the run game. That has been primarily where our success has come this year. And gone are the days of Jet Brohm slinging it 40 times a game. We are now into a much more balanced offensive system. I think that's going to be good for the long run. We needed to do that this year, and the run game absolutely is carried. I saw today Purdue has had back-to-back 300-yard rushing games for the first time since 1968. Tyrone Tracy, Devin Mockabee, those guys are some dynamic threats out of the backfield. There's a little bit of a fumbling issue for Devin, but versus Indiana defense that ranks 12th in the Big Ten, I think Purdue will be able to utilize the run game to move the ball this week. Having Hudson Card play, as I say, would at least give them some boost to the passing offense, but they hasn't been a ton of production this year in that part of their game. The wide receiving core outside of Deion Burks really does lack some explosion. IU does not have a strong secondary, though, so there should be some shots open down the field. We'll see if Purdue can capitalize on them. Purdue has also really struggled on the defensive end, particularly in the secondary. Held up okay in the run game, but the defensive backs have really struggled. Now, Indiana is not a team that's going to light you up, but they got a decent QB prospect in Brennan Sorsby, who isn't putting up massive numbers, but he's taking care of the ball. He's given them a chance in some games. The accuracy could be better, but this is not a Purdue defense that's very strong. This secondary has had their fair share of struggles this year. And so Indiana, with their wide receiver threats, I like them to be able to move the ball against Purdue. Now, the big thing that I'm looking at for the Boilers is their ability to create pressure. They got a couple talented edge rushers. They're second in the Big Ten with 32 sacks. They've done a great job producing pressure this year. I don't know about Indiana offensive line. I don't know how they're going to be able to hold up. But when I look at this game, Purdue has gotten beat badly when they get dominated in the trenches. I don't see that happening with the Hoosiers this week in West Lafayette. It's going to be cold, cloudy, overcast November day. It's what you expect Big Ten West football to be. And I think that Purdue is going to continue their dominance in this series as of late, and they're going to beat the Indiana Hoosiers. They're going to retain the old Oaken bucket, and they are going to avoid that last place finish in the Big Ten.
King, you set the stage very well here. And as I was prepping for this game, this is not a game that I'm talking about on any other podcast this week, believe it or not. But I know, right? As I was prepping for this game, and I really dove into these teams' dashboards, King, I was a little bit surprised. These are two actually really balanced teams in terms of their strengths. I mean, balance doesn't necessarily mean, you know, great or above average or any, but they're balanced. I mean, Purdue, if you look at their offensive and defensive splits, offense, number 83, defense, number 88. You look at Indiana, the offense, number 92, the defense, number 91. So you don't want to be in the 80s and the 90s when you're playing in the Big Ten, but these are balanced teams that actually don't have a ton that separates them, at least in terms of like the power rating world and how I'm kind of trying to break down my raw power rating or my overall power rating into the different units. The fact that this game is at Purdue, I think, of course, provides Purdue with the home field advantage, the blanket value that I use. The fact that, you know, neither one of these teams has, you know, bowl eligibility or some external motivation that either one of them is striving for here, other than just, hey, let's beat our rival. Let's end with the best record that we possibly can. If Purdue gets this win, both of these teams would be about one game. They finished the game about, or they season about one game below my preseason realistic expectations. I projected 5.1 wins for Purdue, 4.0 for IU. So, I mean, if Purdue gets it, which my numbers assign a 65% chance to happen, I like the Boilers by about 5 in this game. Then, you know, they're each only one game behind realistic expectations. Do you want to be below your realistic expectations? Obviously not. But one game below it in Walter's first year from a Purdue standpoint, that's not terrible. I think Indiana fans at this point, I've talked to some of them. I think they're a little bit tired of Tom Allen. I think they're ready for something new. The buyout goes down drastically after this season and all of that plays into it. But I think from a Purdue standpoint, you can feel pretty good. And it's hard to say that when you're currently 3-8, maybe going to be 4-8. Feel pretty good about what happened here in year one, knowing what left the program from last year to this year. And you were in the Big Ten championship game. Jeff Brohm leaves, players leave. I think the future can still be okay. I don't know what it's going to look like for Purdue with no more West to play in, right? The Big Ten doing away with the divisions. You're adding these four teams from the current Pac-12 conference. What does that do to the hierarchy? Probably not great for either of these teams, IU or Purdue, but let's see how that all plays out. IU represents the worst team that Purdue plays all year by my current numbers. It's also the worst opposing defense that this Purdue offense will face all year by my current numbers. So I do think the opportunity is there for Purdue to get this win. It would be their third in a row in this series. It would be their fifth in the last 6 years, only one loss since 2017. Of course, the 2020 game did not occur due to COVID, but that's how my numbers see it. I've got Purdue -5, a 35% chance that Indiana is able to pull off the upset here and not finish in the basement of the Big Ten. Mitchell, let's get you back in here. What do you make of this? I know we just went from your Iron Bowl to now the old Oaken Bucket. What do you think of this game, man?
Myself and I lean on FPI a little bit for this matchup. Admittedly, I have not watched a lot of Indiana or Purdue this season, but FPI and to some degree, I was just checking the QBR. They see it very similar to how you guys were going through it. FPI has Purdue 61%. Looking at QBR, I was surprised. It has Sorsby as the fifth highest QB in the Big Ten. Wow. Top four probably expected McCarthy, McCord, Alar, and Tagovailoa. For a freshman, I would agree that he's looking like a decent prospect. It looks like Hudson Card's kind of had an up and down season a little bit. He's had a few highs, but some lows to go along with it. It looks like the line is at 3. I don't know how much of that is uncertainty based on Card status, but yeah, it seems like Purdue's a little bit of a favorite here.
All right. So I think that means we're all on Purdue in this one. Kinger, let's go get it. Let's bring that old Oaken Bucket. Keep it in West Lafayette. It should be a good game. And like you said, it's a rivalry. Every single one of these rivalry games means a ton to these fan bases. I, for one, am glad, because I know a lot of our listeners are Purdue fans. I'm glad we talked about Purdue here in this game. From that game to the game, you guys. Of course, I put it on the schedule. I think you both knew I was going to pick it, so there was no obligation for either of you two. I'm talking about Ohio State at Michigan. Guys, this game has a watchability score of 9.9 out of 10. It is my number one regular season game of the entire season based on my watchability metric, which, for those unfamiliar, is a weighted average of talent, quality of team, and projected competitiveness of the game. These two teams in both of those categories are off the charts. As high as you can be here, 10 is the theoretical limit. Really quickly about these resumes, I know the committee has Georgia number one, and I understand why they are there. However, when the argument starts with two-time defending national champs, you've already lost me. Because in my opinion, what we should be doing is ranking teams in this year's playoff rankings based on their performance and achievements in the 2023 college football regular season. What Georgia has accomplished each of the past 2 years is phenomenal. It's a great achievement for that program. It has nothing to do with this 2023 team. And quite frankly, it's unfair to the other 132 teams that are playing college football at the FBS level to be giving Georgia credit for what that program accomplished each of the last 2 years. The two teams that I think have the biggest beef with the committee are these two teams. I have Georgia number 3 in my most deserving rankings. Ohio State for me is number 1. They have been number 1 for 5 consecutive weeks now. I have Michigan number 2 in my most deserving. They have been number 2 now for 2 consecutive weeks. Ohio State's number 2 in my record achievement metric. Only a 2% chance the average top 25 team would be undefeated against Ohio State's schedule. Michigan is number 6 in that metric, a 5% chance of of the top 25 team being undefeated against Michigan's schedule. Relative scoring margin. How much has a team over or underachieved with regard to scoring margin relative to what would be expected of the average top 25 team against that team's schedule? Michigan is number 1 in the country, as they have been for each of the last 5 weeks. Michigan is outscoring their opponents by 14.5 points per game more than would be expected of the average top 25 team against the Wolverine schedule. Ohio State, number 3 in that metric, plus 12.7 is their raw score there. These two teams are playing well. They have very solid resumes. They deserve to be ranked 1 and 2. They're 2 and 3. Does that ultimately matter? Maybe, maybe not. We'll see how it all plays out. I'm more curious to see, and we'll get to this with the predictor later, Mitchell, what happens if Ohio State loses this game? What chance do they have to still make the playoff? Michigan, probably not quite as good given their schedule strength, maybe not not quite up there with Ohio State's, not as much meat on the bone if they lose this one. But from a predictive analytics standpoint, which is what we need to look at to break this game down, there's very little that separates these two teams. My numbers have Michigan as the favorite, 3.5 points to be exact, but some of that's home field advantage. Guys, this is the first time I've had Ohio State projected as an underdog using my power ratings in a regular season game since 2018. They've lost a couple of regular season games since 2018. Not many, but a couple. My model has never projected them to be an underdog in those games, though. This is the first time since 2018 that my numbers say there's a less than 50% win expectancy for Ohio State in a regular season game. Like, I'm shook. Kinger, I got to go with the model and the pick 'em, right? Like, we're going to find out. Am I really going to pick Michigan? I don't know if I'm there yet or not. I have Ohio State power rated number 2 in the country. Michigan is number 1, and they've been number 1 for 5 straight weeks. They're playing phenomenally on both sides of the ball. This is the number 1 defense in the country, Ohio State. They have the number 2 defense in the country by my numbers. On the offensive side, Michigan is number 6. Ohio State is number 17. That, to me, makes the difference, plus the home field advantage. That's why the model likes Michigan in this game. The model says Michigan. Guys, deep down, I feel better about Ohio State's chances here in the 2023 game than I did in the 2022 game last year when Ohio State was actually a favorite. They were at home in that one, too. With the Harbaugh stuff going on, with what I think Ryan Day has learned about how he needs to call plays in these big games, he learned it last year in the Georgia game. Granted, he had C.J. Stroud in the Georgia game last year. Kyle McCord is not C.J. Stroud. I admit that. I give you that. But I still think there's a way that Ryan Day can call plays and be aggressive in a way that might be able to catch Michigan off guard a little bit, because he hasn't called plays against Michigan that way the past couple of years. And Jim Knowles has said as much. The defense is approaching things differently this year. They're not going for knockout punches. They're not going for sacks on third and medium. They're just dropping back. And they're saying, you're not going to beat us over the top. We're going to make you dink and dunk and string together 7, 8, 9, 10, 12, 15 plays in a row where you're better than us. And he's banking on the fact that most offenses are not going to be better than his defense that many plays in a row, and this defense will take advantage and capitalize on any mistakes. We'll see if it works out. I mean, this is going to be, from an Ohio State perspective, this is going to be the most difficult team they played all year. This is going to be their biggest test on both sides of the ball, but the same can be said for Michigan. This is all out, everything on the line, win and in kind of deal for the Big Ten championship. The winner here is going to be a 22-point favorite. What my numbers make Michigan over Iowa on a neutral field. So I guess that would make Ohio State somewhere around a 20-21-point favorite. They're going to be huge favorites against Iowa. You win this game, you're likely going to the CFP. It's all on the line. I'm very excited for it. Mitchell, what does FPI think? What do you think about this massive game in Ann Arbor?
So similar to your game. I apologize. I don't remember what you call it. We call it like pregame matchup quality. But on our 1 to 100 scale, this is a 99.5. So also our highest regular season game of the year, followed by Alabama, Georgia. This is a huge matchup. FPI has been a bit higher on Ohio State than some of the other advanced metrics have been this year. Just in pure power ranking strength, it has Ohio State by about 3 points. Once you factor in home field, it's closer to about a point and a half this is a point and a half in Michigan's favor. It likes Michigan. It thinks Ohio State's a better team, but it likes Michigan here because of the home field. I think I'm leaning more in your direction. I have a hard time when you're giving me points on Ohio State going against Ohio State, especially with a team whose defense has really come around in the last year and a half. I mean, their defense might be the best unit on the field. That for my money might be the best unit on the field. Some people might disagree. When you're giving me Ohio State and some points, I'll take that.
Kinger, what do you think? It's the game.
the game. There's always bad blood here, but after Michigan's taken the last two, we've got a little bit of increased hostility right now with the sign-stealing scandal. This is a massive game, and I think there's a little bit more pressure on Ryan Day this year based on the outcome of the last two. And I'm with you, Mitchell. I mean, 3.5 to me seems like you got to lean towards Ohio State on this one. We have two very good defenses in this, and I think the game's really going to come down to who can capitalize on those big explosive plays. And if you just look at it from that perspective, you have to lean Ohio State just because of those offensive weapons, the firepower. Marvin Harrison Jr. has been elite. He's been as advertised. And Kyle McCord, Kelly, you mentioned him. He's not C.J. Stroud, but he's done a very good job this year. He was a guy who I had some negative criticism towards the beginning of the year, but he's definitely not the most recognized QB in this game with J.J. McCarthy, but he's been very good for them. 22 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, 67 completion percentage. He's provided a lot of help for those Buckeyes. They needed good QB play this year, and they've really gotten it for the most part from McCord. Now, this Michigan secondary, they're ranked second in the Big Ten, allowing just 144 yards per game, only allowed 5 passing touchdowns on the year. I think we are going to see Ohio State exceed that mark this week. I think they are going to have to rely on that passing game because Michigan is so good up front against the run, only allowing 2.96 yards per carry. Penn State was able to get after him a little bit earlier this year. They've got a sound offensive line. Ohio State is built like that. But I still think you have to give the Wolverines an edge in that defensive matchup. And you talk about that Ohio State defense as well. They deserve plenty of praise. They've answered the questions this year. They've really improved and turned into a solid unit. Michigan has turned into a pretty balanced team. That run game is where it starts. They have absolutely ran all over the Buckeyes the last 2 years, putting up 250 yards on the ground last year and 292 in 2022. I'd be willing to bet that Ohio State remembers that, and they are going to do everything that they can to make sure that does not happen again this year. I don't anticipate Michigan having that success on the ground that they've had the last 2 years. They really got dominated, and I don't think that that's going to happen again. Now, Michigan will be able to run the ball, obviously some. They are too talented, but I don't think we see a performance like that. And the Buckeyes secondary, they're going to have to play well this week. This is a top 10 ranked unit nationally, 143 yards per game. Granted, the QB play in the Big Ten has not been stellar. Obviously, can be applied to both of these units, but that Ohio State defense is going to have to play well. They have that matchup advantage over some of those Michigan wide receivers, which we've talked about, but Michigan's found ways to get it done. And I do think we see scoring in this game. I actually think this over is something that I would take a look at as well, 46. I wouldn't be surprised if we exceeded that number again. I'll wait and give you my pick as well. But just off the betting standpoint, I definitely do think I lean Ohio State slightly in this one this week.
I am nervous for it, guys. For those listening, family, friends, whoever, that have my cell phone number, do not text me, do not call me, do not DM me, do not tweet at me, any of those things during this game. Well, I guess you can. My phone will be off. And depending on the outcome of the game, we'll let you know when the phone comes back on. It happens every year. I got so used to winning this game from an Ohio State perspective, I honestly forgot what it was like to lose. It's now been 2 years of losses, been since 2019 that Ohio State's won. I don't know if my heart can take another loss this year. It's too much. All right, guys. We're moving on. We've got one more rivalry game that we want to break down in the feature section. It's the fans' pick of the week, and I'll be honest, this is the game I was hoping they would pick. Nothing against the other options, but this is the one that I wanted. It is the Civil War. We have Oregon State going on the road to Oregon in a game, guys. It's not like the Apple Cup. The Apple Cup just decided, thankfully, they came to an agreement. They're playing that game for at least the next 5 years. It's very exciting. I wish we'd get some news like that about this game. Haven't seen it yet. So as far as I know, like Bedlam, this is the last time we'll see this game for the foreseeable future, at least based on the information that I have right now. Oregon State at Oregon, the Civil War. Mitchell, as our guest, you get to go first. What do you make of this one?
You know, myself and FPI like Oregon a lot here. We've got Oregon by, let's see, 12.5. It's seen a lot from Bo Nix this year that it likes. I think he would be third in QBR this year behind only McCarthy and Daniels. Uyangalele's had a good but maybe underwhelming year. He is 12th in QBR. At least based on his talent. I mean, obviously overperforming where he was at Clemson. But you know, maybe 5-star guy in a new situation, you might be looking for a little bit more. But yeah, Oregon at home, all the firepower of that offense, the what Dan Lanning's done with that defense in a short time. Gotta roll with Oregon here.
Kinger, what about you? Civil War.
Yeah, I've only placed two bets this week, Kelly, but one of them is I'm taking Oregon minus 13.5 at home. I've been looking at that line all day. It was up at 14.5 opened. It was at 14 earlier. It dropped down to 13.5. So I'm getting all over the Ducks in this one. And this is a rivalry game. There's obviously going to be a lot of animosity here. But I'm looking at this one from the Oregon State perspective. That game last week with Washington was really the big one for them. They were then eliminated from the chances of the Pac-12 title game, and I think it's going to be very tough for them to get up again this week and beat this very good Oregon team on the road in Eugene. The Ducks have to win this week to guarantee their spot in the Pac-12 championship game, so there still are some stakes there, and this is not one that I see them messing around too much, and I think they are going to win this game quite easily. And, you know, unlike Washington's defense, which had some questionable as of late, the Ducks' defense has been really solid this year. Now, Washington did do a pretty good job versus the Beavers last week, keeping them under 4 yards per carry. And I think the Ducks are in a position this week once again where they are going to make it tough on Oregon State to run the ball. Now, Oregon, I think, has the best defense in the Pac-12. That front seven is much more physical in the run game, and that secondary for Oregon really has taken a big step this year. DJU has given the Beavers an offensive boost at the quarterback position, but he's still not a guy that can really carry the offense, and I do think that the Ducks' defense has the big advantage this week. Now, the Oregon State defense, they played very well last week, but they're going to have their hands full once again. Bo Nix is on absolute fire right now. That offensive line is great. They've got a elite receiving core. And I think what really separates them in this game is their ability to run the ball. We talked about last week, Oregon State's ability to create pressure and create turnovers. But once again, the key to them this week is going to be – that's going to be once again the same key to them for this game this week. But I think the difference is that Oregon has that run game that Washington maybe doesn't have quite that same level. Oregon is second in the conference in rushing yards. Bucky Irving and Jordan James are big-time threats out of the backfield. They're averaging over 6.3 yards per carry and 7 yards per carry, respectively. Getting that run game going is really going to open up things up for Nix in that offense. And if he's playing as good as he's had been, I don't think Oregon State's going to keep this one close. I see this very easily being a 3-score game. It is a rivalry game. But again, I just think Oregon is definitely the talented team here. And I don't think the Ducks or the Beavers are going to have quite that motivation and same get up. Yes, they still want to beat their opponent, but the long-term season goal for them has been eliminated now. And I think Oregon's in a really good spot to cover this week at home.
You could argue, guys, no team has played better the past month than the Ducks, other than maybe Georgia here recently kind of hitting their stride. Oregon is number 4 in my power ratings. They have the number 1 offense for the 4th straight week. They're now up to a season best number 15 on defense. This team is firing on all cylinders, as you both said. From a deserving standpoint, you know, a most deserving a resume, I have them number 8. So I know the committee really, really likes them. They're certainly looking at the, quote, eye test for the for Oregon in this situation. I love them from a, quote, eye test or power rating standpoint, too. I'm not sure their resume stacks up just yet, but they've got a big opportunity here against Oregon State. And then, of course, if they win this one, they get a rematch with Washington in Las Vegas. For Oregon State, the Beavers' power rating, it actually improved slightly following last week's close loss at home to that Washington team. At number 13, I actually give Oregon State's offense the slightest of edges against the Oregon defense in this game. But that number 1 ranked Ducks offense at home, no less, in Autzen, man, that is a tough place to play. It's likely too much for the Beavers' defense that I have currently ranked number 27. This game, a huge rivalry that has no future meetings on the books, as I mentioned, with a 2-touchdown spread. It screams a classic college football chaos game. I mean, again, look no farther than Bedlam just a few weeks ago. Same exact situation. I won't be surprised at all if Oregon State keeps it close late into the fourth quarter here, or even if they find a way to win, because that's how these rivalry games go. But the model isn't picking an upset in this one. If it was, I'd be questioning the merits of the model and the process behind the scenes. To recap it, though, I've got Oregon minus 13, very close to the Vegas line. It's an 18% chance that Oregon State wins back-to-back games in this rivalry for the first time since 2006-2007, guys. Been a long time since Oregon State's won 2 in a row in the Civil War. All right, those are our feature games. We usually transition at this time to the ESPN Pick'em competition, and I'm looking how long we've been going as expected on Rivalry Week. We're pushing an hour already, so we won't spend too much time here. But Mitchell, I did want to carve out some time based on some pre-record session chats that we had about the ESPN All-State Playoff Predictor. Let's get into that a little, if you will. I know we talked about it at the beginning, too, but let me start with a question I had posed earlier. If Ohio State loses to Michigan here this week, based on, you can explain it better, but 10,000 simulations, right, of the rest of the regular season, based, like if you put in this one result, 10,000 sims of everything else, what percent chance does Ohio State have to still make the playoff with a loss to Michigan this week?
Loss to Michigan. So I'm putting, anybody at home listening wants to test this out himself, they can just kind of go to Google, put in All State Playoff Predictor, should be the top link.
Is it updated now with the new committee rankings here just a couple hours ago?
It will not be. It'll okay. be updated in the morning. It'll take a couple hours to update with that.
So by the time this airs, yes, it will be updated. Got it.
Yes, true. Yes, good point. So let's see. Right now, before the current rankings are implemented, let's see. So they wouldn't make the conference title game. We would have Ohio State with 32% to make the playoff if they lost to Michigan.
It's actually pretty decent of a chance based on what they got going on in that scenario. Mitchell, one more for me, and King, you might have some too. And certainly, Mitchell, want to get your, like, if you have any chaos scenarios in mind that you find particularly interesting. But one more from me would be, and I don't know if it works this way, like 538, which I think ESPN or Disney owned at one point, but they've since done away with their sports department, I believe, which is unfortunate because I loved those projections or the interactions that they had. I don't know if you can do this, but with the ESPN playoff predictor, who gets in the playoff, Mitchell, in a scenario where, let's say, Florida State wins out, they're 13-0 ACC champs, and let's say Michigan wins out, they're 13-0 Big Ten champs, but then Oregon wins out, so they're 12-1 Pac-12 champs, Texas wins out, so they're 12-1 Big 12 champs, and Alabama wins out, so they're 12-1 SEC champs. Of course, that means Georgia is 12-1 non-champs. That means Washington is 12-1 non-champs. And it means Ohio State likely, I mean, I don't think there's any chance in this scenario. Ohio State, though, is 11-1 non-champs. Like, who's the four? Obviously, well, maybe not obviously, I would guess Michigan is number one and Florida State is probably number two. I mean, they're 13-0. I don't know if one of these one-loss teams jumps them, but Florida State's in the top four. Who are the other two teams?
All right, so let's see. I'm just making sure. So we've got the external, the All-State Playoff Predictor. You sort of pick one team, one result at a time. We have an internal tool where we can sort of go through
and
sort of pick all these scenarios that you're talking about. So I'm just punching it in as you're talking about it.
Let's go.
So we've got Florida State winning out. We've got Michigan winning out. We've got Alabama winning out. Georgia at least beating Georgia Tech. What was Correct. The other one? So we had Oregon.
Oregon wins out, and Washington wins the Apple Cup.
Okay.
And then and that's everything. I think. Texas wins out, and you can have Texas play Oklahoma State's the most likely conference champion opponent, right? So have them play Oklahoma State if that matters in this.
I just to not cut down on too many sims, I'll just have Texas win out.
Perfect.
And then Washington get down to the W's.
Oh, dude, I love this. We've got the internal going.
All right, so this scenario, let's see. So we've got 10,000 sims. We have this scenario in about 376 sims to look at. So a decent sample to work with. We've got, as you said, Michigan 100% in. I don't have the actual ranking breakdown, but I do have the playoff chances. So Michigan 100% in. Florida State 98%.
Yeah, there it is.
Oregon 76%, Georgia 60%, Ohio State 44%, Alabama 12%, Texas 11%.
What?
Yeah.
So Georgia still gets in?
Yeah. So
Alabama and Texas?
Yeah. So we were talking about this before the show, and some of this is, sort of based on past history. I mean, we haven't had really examples of teams like number one teams losing, like number one, number two teams like losing this late in the season and falling completely out of the rankings.
Right.
Now, obviously, this is a year that, frankly, the model has not seen. I mean, we haven't had a year where we're going into like the last week of the season and we have like eight teams that, seven, eight teams, whatever it is at this point, sort of in a viable position for the playoff. So Yeah. So, but that's what we have right now. We still give both Georgia and Ohio State a pretty decent chance of making it as one loss non-conference champs.
Interesting. All right. Well, Kinger, I've allotted my questions here. What you got? Anything for the All-State playoff predictor, Kinger?
No, honestly, your scenario that you just laid out was the one that was most intriguing to me, because that could absolutely bring some chaos, and you're going to have some very upset fan bases if that turns out to be the results of the season. So I'm just looking forward to seeing how everything played out. Very interesting to hear the perspective from the playoff indicator on that.
I should probably mention again that these are based on these probably will move a little bit based on like tonight's rankings. So, you know, we can be a little more confident now that we've seen this week's rankings versus what our predictors looking at just last week's rankings. But yeah, I mean, they're sort of directionally informational, at least in that way.
I love it, dude. That is so cool. I love that you've got the internal behind the scenes. You can run all the different scenarios simultaneously. Because yes, of course, said it earlier, I'm a nerd. I've played around on the ESPN playoff predictor, you know, picking the teams. And it's been interesting to see, Mitchell, this year, how that number of teams has dwindled. You know, when you first debut it in week, what, 7 or 8, whenever it is that it first comes out every single year, you've got any team that has more than, I think, a 3 or 4% chance. And that's like 16, 17 teams that you can put out there, and every single week in the 4-team playoff era, that number's dropping. And now you've had, I think, 9 teams, maybe 10 teams each of the last couple of weeks. And it's the usual suspects that you'd expect based on where we are with the rankings at this time of year. It'll be interesting though, Mitchell, and I'm sure you'll have it on your summer to-do list. How does the ESPN playoff predictor need to be, I won't even say retooled, how does it need to be redone in the 12-team playoff era, because now the whole process is different, right? You've got your AQs, you've got the non-power 5-4, whatever we're calling that, the old group of 5, someone's going to get in from there, right? And so it's just, yes, it'll be very interesting to see how that goes. I'm very much looking forward to that. But Mitchell, anything from your end that you want to add to any crazy scenario or any additional context on the playoff predictor before we get into our pick'em competition? Also run through ESPN, by the way. We are all over ESPN here tonight.
No, I mean, you hit on the scenario I think everybody's interested in. So I would just say, you know, whenever the rankings are updated, in the model, just go play with it yourself.
Love it. Very cool. Make sure you guys check that out. Go to Google. Like Mitchell said, just type in ESPN All-State Playoff Predictor, pops right up. It's a very fun tool. It's also in the ESPN app. That's where I mess around with it usually when I'm doing that. So, all right, guys, let's get into another ESPN function. It is the ESPN Pick'em Competition. Mitchell, we've had this thing going all year, each of the last couple of years now, and it's coming right down to the end as it usually does. King, if I'm not mistaken, I believe conference championship game week like counts in the season total. Yeah. Okay. So we've got 2 more weeks. We've got this one and we've got conference championship game. King, you are currently 32 points behind me, I believe. 37 points behind me, I think, if my math is correct on this one. So it's some ground to make up, but it's not impossible given we have 2 weeks left. It'll be interesting to see how, if at all, you've got some game theory going with your picks this week based on what you think mine are going to be. Mitchell, the way we do this, we've got 10 games on the ESPN app in the pick'em competition. We pick the straight-up winner. No spreads. King and I find it hard enough to pick the winners straight up. Don't worry about the spreads in this one. You pick each winner 1 to 10 confidence points. 1 is your least, 10 is your most. You use every single number once. We'll start with you. We'll go to King. We'll come to me, and we'll go from there. King, I do want to note before I get to Mitchell on our first game, if we would have used – so our previous format, for those that have been listening since the beginning of this show a few years ago now, we talked about these games. These are the games we broke down like on the podcast. King, if we would have done this slate of 10 games on this show, we would have talked about Ohio State, Michigan. And that's it. Of the ones that we actually talked about, we wouldn't have talked about the Iron Bowl. We wouldn't have talked about the Old Oaken Bucket. We wouldn't have talked about the Civil War. I cannot tell you how happy I am that we have the current format that we do, King. And it was, again, a great idea that you had with the final tweak that we implemented this year. So it would have been a different episode, King, if we were under the old format, man.
No doubt about it. I think for our own sanity, as well as for the benefit of the listeners, this was a good decision.
Yeah, you guys did want to break down Jacksonville State and New Mexico State?
Dude, we've had some real, hey, that's, you know, that's an interesting game in its own right, but it doesn't probably have the same appeal as some of the other ones we were talking about. I don't even know how to spin this. No, we didn't want to break that one down as a feature game, Mitchell. I'll tell you that. All right, let's get into this. Mitch, we're coming to you first. It's the game that we did break down. The one feature game that's in the Pick'em competition, the game. 9.9 watchability score, 99.5 pregame quality metric from ESPN. Sorry if I misspoke on what it's called. But either way, this game's going to be fantastic. Mitchell, who's your winner and how many confidence points?
Like I talked about in the breakdown earlier, I've got Ohio State. I've got them at three confidence points.
Finger? Where are you going here?
I just did a switch, man. I was going to take Michigan, but I'm probably going to bet Ohio State in this one. So I'm going to take the Buckeyes for two confidence points.
I cannot believe this just happened to me. I cannot believe that you both just went with the underdog Buckeyes. King, I can't do it.
I know you can't. That's one of the reasons why I did just switch, to put you in that position as well, to see if you were going to go against the model. Because the model, you said, likes Michigan by three.
Three and a half is the rounded to nearest half point this week. King, I can't do it. It makes me sick, and I hope I'm wrong. I'm going to go officially with Michigan. And, guys, I'm going to take six confidence points on this game. I hope I'm wrong, but that's what the model says. Okay, let's go to another one. Another game that I'm excited about. I think this is actually one of the games we had in the fan vote, the Twitter poll. It didn't get picked, but it's still a good rivalry game. We've got Kentucky going on the road to face Louisville here. Mitchell, who do you like? How many points?
I've got pretty strong on Louisville. I've got them 9 points.
Kinger?
There's been no Jeff Brohm letdown game. Unfortunately, as great of a coach as Jeff Brohm was for the Purdue Boilermakers, we were accustomed to seeing some poor performances. Louisville has not really done that thus far this year, so I'm really high on the Cardinals this week. I have Louisville for 9 confidence points.
I will say there was a Jeff Brohm letdown game, King. It was on the road at
NC State. Yeah, that's true.
And it was the pit game. It was the worst.
Oh, Pitt, that's right. Yeah.
It was maybe the worst loss of the year by any team that's still a contender in this thing. But hey, other than that, what a year for Louisville. 10-1. My preseason realistic expectations, 7.6 wins. 8-4 was the most likely record. Just a great year for Jeff Brohm. There's no getting around it. Big loss for Purdue. We knew it was going to be. Happy for him at his alma mater. Guys, I'm joining you on Louisville. Give me Louisville. I'm going to take for 10 confidence points in this one, actually. Let's go out to the Mountain West. This is a huge game in the Mountain West. Both these teams still have a chance to make the conference championship game. UNLV almost assuredly is going to make the game. San Jose State, they have a chance, but they have to win it. San Jose State is on the road at UNLV. Mitchell, what do you think?
I've got UNLV in this one on 6 confidence points.
Right on, Kinger.
Double me up with Mitchell there. UNLV for 6.
I'll join you guys on UNLV. I will take them, though, for only 2 confidence points. Let's go to the Big Ten West, King. Here's a game I'm very glad we didn't spend feature time on. I don't even know how to pump it up, guys. It's an in-state rivalry. I mean, it means a lot to these fan bases, but let's just get to it. It's Northwestern at Illinois. What do you make, Mitchell?
I've got the Illini with 7 points.
Kinger?
Give me the Illini with 8.
I will say, I guess, it does matter a lot for Illinois that win here makes them bowl eligible. Northwestern, if you can believe it, this Northwestern team, after what they went through this summer, already bowl eligible this year. It's incredible. I'll join you guys on Illinois. I'll join Mitchell on the confidence points. Give me the Illini for 7. Let's keep it in the Big Ten West. This game means a ton to the history of college football. I do believe, if I'm not mistaken, it is the oldest consecutive rivalry, like oldest every single year they play, annual rivalry in existence right now. It is Wisconsin at Minnesota. I believe that's correct, that they played more times in a row here than any other rivalry in college FBS college football. Mitchell, who do you like, Wisconsin at Minnesota?
Got Badgers on the road with 5 points.
Kinger?
I'm going to take the Gophers at home for 1.
Ooh, okay. King going against the grain. So I need to break this tie. I'm going to go with Wisconsin. I'm a little bit less confident than Mitchell. Give me the Badgers for 4 confidence points. Another big rivalry game, as all of them are this week, which is why I love it. We're in the state of Virginia. It is Virginia Tech hitting the road to play UVA. Mitchell, what do you think here? The Virginia Cavaliers at home hosting the Hokies of Virginia Tech.
I've got the Hokies 2 points.
Kinger?
You mentioned that Pittsburgh upset of Louisville. Another massive upset this year was by the Virginia Cavaliers over North Carolina. So I think this is going to be a closer game than anticipated, but give me Virginia Tech for four.
I want to just note, because I even tweeted about it at the time, that was our back-to-back weeks on the CW. If you weren't tuned into the CW for ACC football in weeks 7 and 8, you missed some big upsets. It was a lot of fun. I actually did tune into both of those games by the end and caught the ends of them. Give me Virginia Tech in this game for 3. Kinger, just so I have it right, you have Virginia Tech for 4, correct?
Correct.
Perfect. We're all on Virginia Tech, 2, 3, and 4 points, respectively. Here's the game Mitchell threw a haymaker at earlier. We got Jacksonville State, who, hey, transitioning from FCS, they're having a great year, actually, in year one at the FBS level, ineligible for the conference championship game. They wouldn't have made it anyway as it shakes out, but this is a really good team that has surprised this year. They are going on the road to play a New Mexico State team who, guys, they might be, I mean, we talked about it earlier, they beat Auburn last week on the Plains by 21 points. This might be the team that has surprised the most this year. As I'm looking at my kind of over under realistic expectations, overachievers, they're number 3 on my overachiever list, the New Mexico State Aggies. Mitchell, who do you like here? It's Jacksonville State at New Mexico State.
I've got the home state team, Jacksonville State, with 1 point.
Kinger?
Jacksonville State with 3.
All right, I'm going to go against you guys here. I'm actually going to go New Mexico State, but only for 1 confidence point for me. And I did misspeak. If Jacksonville State was eligible for their conference championship game, this would be a win-and-in game. Both these teams have only 1 loss on the year, both of them to Liberty. So the winner here would be in, the loser would be out. As it is, New Mexico State already booked their place in the Conference USA Championship game for their 14th game of the regular season, guys. Honestly, it broke my model a little bit as I'm doing the most deserving. It's only set up for 13 games. I plug in and I go, wait a minute, that can't be right. I had a number over 100% for something. I said, that's not right. I looked at it. I said, well, New Mexico State's playing 14 games. I have to make a little adjustment here to the New Mexico State page on the back end of the model. Okay, let's move on to the Big 12. We've got Kansas State playing at Cincinnati. This is probably the game that's the least rivalry-esque, if I had to guess, on the slate that we're picking here. Mitchell, who do you like here, Kansas at Cincinnati?
I got the Jayhawks, 8 points.
Kinger?
Jayhawks for 7.
I'm going to join you guys on the Jayhawks. I'm going to take them for 9 confidence points. Neither one of you have used your 10. I think I know where it's coming. We've got Clemson going on the road to South Carolina here. This is a heated rivalry game, guys. These two teams do not like each other. We talk about states being split. The state of South Carolina is split on this one. Both these teams want a win desperately. Clemson trying to avenge last year. South Carolina trying to get bowl eligible. Tons on the line. Mitchell, what do you make South Carolina hosting their rivals, Clemson?
I don't feel great about it, but yeah, you're right. This is my 10-pointer here. I got 10 on Clemson.
Kinger?
10 on Clemson.
I had a feeling looking at what was left and looking at your scores that that might be coming. Give me Clemson. I've already used my 10 and my 9 for that matter. Give me Clemson for 8 confidence points. Our final game, let's go just one state north. We're going North Carolina now for an ACC showdown between the Tar Heels out of Chapel Hill. They're going to Raleigh to take on the NC State Wolfpack. Guys, who do you like in this game? How many points?
I got UNC 4 points.
Kinger?
I got North Carolina for 5.
King, I'm going to join you exactly on that. Give me North Carolina for 5 confidence points. That wraps up our Pick'em competition segment. King, let's go to you for some best bets here. You talked about Oregon earlier. I think you said you had 1 more on the card. What do you got here in week 13?
I still got to spend some more time this week. Have admittedly not spent a lot of time looking at the slate too hard this weekend. But that Oregon game, 13.5 at home, I like them in that position to clinch their spot in the Pac-12 title. And then another home favorite. I have not been able to get on the right side of them this year, but so it's a little bit scary. But Oklahoma is only laying 10 at home versus TCU. This is a game that they must win this week. I think the Sooners are going to get it done. And I think that that's going to potentially turn into a little bit of a blowout. TCU, up and down team this year. But in this spot for Oklahoma, I think 10's too little for this. Give me the Sooners in that one as well.
For what it's worth, Kinger, my model has Oklahoma minus 14.5. So I do think there's some value on the Sooners laying only 10. Mitchell, what about you? Any best bets that you want to give us either from your personal perspective or from FPI? Again, not necessary by any means, but we certainly like to offer our guests the opportunity.
I don't have any personal. I'll just add on FPI as Oklahoma 15. So, you know, same ballpark there. A couple interesting games. I'll just be interested to see how they play out. LSU, A&M coming off coaching change. See how that we FPI likes LSU by 7, and then Florida State. Obviously, tragic injury to Jordan Travis. So see if the Seminoles can rally in a tough environment.
I've got LSU minus 7.5. So again, close to FPI in that game. Mitchell, what does FPI make Florida State? And is it explicitly accounting for Jordan Travis's injury?
It does not. We've got Florida State 13, but it doesn't know about Jordan Travis yet.
And I've got Florida State minus 12.5. My model not explicitly accounting for the injury to Jordan Travis. He is now out for, his career at Florida State is over. But as he said, they are not, their business is not finished. So it will be interesting to see what Florida State's able to do, not just in the Swamp this week, but also in Charlotte against Louisville next week. Mitchell, before we get out of here, this has been so much fun, man. It was overdue. Like I love FPI. I love the ESPN analytics team. We had your colleague Bill Connolly on earlier, ESPN staffer. Now we had him on the show earlier this year with his SP Plus numbers. It was fantastic. This has been another fantastic episode. Really enjoyed having you. So much fun talking the All-State playoff predictor, FPI, all the things that go into it, your role in particular. This was great, man. I'm glad we were able to have you on in a week that we could talk about your Crimson Tide and the Iron Bowl. It all worked out. Before we leave, though, just do us a favor. Plug anything you want to plug. Where can our listeners find you? If you want them to find you, I guess that is. But just anything you want to plug, man, plug away, because this has been great, and I think people are going to want to continue to check out your work.
Yeah, appreciate it. I really, really enjoyed getting on here. I would say, like I said before, just go play around in the All-State Playoff Predictor app if that interests you. If there's specific scenarios, you know, that are a little more involved, like we sort of went through on the show, come find me on Twitter. Just hit me up. I'll run it for you. WessonMO is my handle. Other than that, I appreciate it.
Love it. You know I'm going to be hitting you up, Mitchell, with some scenarios here now that that's out there. No, this was great. We appreciate you being on. It was another fun episode. Guys, girls, anyone listening, I cannot tell you how much we appreciate you listening to us all season long. We'll be back next week for the conference championship games, of course. But until then, please, please enjoy, cherish Rivalry Week, my favorite week of the entire college football regular season. I know King agrees. King, you even tweeted earlier this week. It was a Sunday, maybe. You said, let's kick off the best 7 days of the sports calendar. Is that correct? This is your favorite time of year, period.
Yeah, I mean, it's right up there with the first opening weekend of March Madness, the opening kickoff of college football, and then these 7 days, Feast Week, when you get all the major sports with the exception of baseball, college basketball all day. I mean, you can't beat it, man. You can't beat it. We had college football tonight. It's one of the best times of the year, no doubt.
It certainly is. Enjoy it, everybody. It'll be gone before we know it, and we'll be wishing it was back. So until next time, for Kinger, for myself, for Mitchell, this has been the We Hate Your Team podcast, a proud member of the BSN Collegiate Network. Enjoy week 13, rivalry week of the college football season.